This podcast is brought to you by lilybadcock.com and The Confidence Academy, giving you the confidence to be who you truly are. This is The Confidence Academy podcast. My name is Lily Badcock, and I am a transformational confidence coach, and I'm here with a message for you. The anxiety and overwhelm you've been experiencing is not something to be feared or avoided. It's also not something that gets to define who you are as a person. No matter who you are, no matter what your story is, I know that you get to live a life of fulfillment and joy. It's my absolute pleasure to bring this podcast series to you in collaboration with some phenomenal people from all over the world who have walked the same path as you. Together, we will share our stories, our challenges, and our triumphs with the intention of helping you to see that it's possible for you too. Anxiety may be something you live with, but it doesn't get to define who you are or how you live your life. So stand by for some powerful conversations, deep realizations, and the occasional F-bomb. So get those headphones in if you're around sensitive ears, and stand by. This is going to be fun. Hello and welcome back to the podcast. On the show this week is professional singer and Broadway performer Afra Hines. We chatted all about the power of music and how it can help to boost our confidence and help us to overcome symptoms of anxiety and stress. Afra also shared her own experiences of managing the stress and worry that can arise in audition situations, but how this is also relevant in day-to-day life. I was so honoured and excited to have this conversation, and I hope that you love it as much as I did. Please come and join us in the Confidence Academy Facebook group so we can continue the conversation there. And of course, if you know anyone who might benefit from this episode, please feel free to share it with them. Finally, you can join my mailing list by clicking the link in the show notes to make sure you never miss an episode. Okay, that's all for now. This is Afra Hines. Hi guys, welcome back to the podcast. It's a very exciting episode, and I know I say that all the time, but for real this time, right? Because I've got Afra Hines on, and Afra is a Broadway performer, you guys. She's been in 8 Broadway shows. She's currently away, obviously, because they've all shut down because of COVID, but also she is enjoying being a mum to her beautiful 7-month-old daughter, Loretta. And she's just taken time out of that to sit with us today. So Afra, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. This is so exciting.
It's so exciting. And the really, really exciting thing about it is we connected in Clubhouse. Now, yeah. People are going to start thinking that I'm on some kind of commission because I keep talking about Clubhouse. But I love it. I think it's so great for making connections. And this is exactly why. So I was so interested to get you on this show because We have conversations on here all the time about managing anxiety, overcoming, you know, self-doubt and things like that. And we also have a lot of conversations around spiritual awakening and finding purpose in life. And I think that as a creative, you know, singers, dancers, for a lot of people, that is often rooted in passion before anything else. So I would just be really interested, first of all, to find out a little bit about you, how you got started and how you ended up in Broadway.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I started dancing when I was really, really young. My mom was in creative movement when I was 3 years old. So I've been dancing my whole life. It wasn't until I was in high school that I saw my first Broadway show. I didn't even know what Broadway was because I'm not from New York originally. I'm from Florida. And so I didn't see a Broadway show until I was in high school. And then I realized, oh, that's something I want to do. But yeah, I've been dancing my whole life, started singing when I was in high school because I thought, oh, I want to do Broadway. And so I need to also learn to act and also learn to sing. So here I am.
I love that. And do you know what? I think it's so exciting because back when I was a kid, it was it was not really the done thing. There were definitely dance schools, and I started out the same as you. I started as a dancer, but I'm definitely a singer before I'm a dancer. And I actually used to ask my teacher whenever there were shows, I used to say, well, can I just sing this one? Can I not do the dance? She's like, no, you have to do the dance. But what I think is brilliant is that over the years, it's become way more accessible for people. You know, I remember years ago, it was really only for a small amount of people that would get the opportunity to train for something like that. So it's super exciting that you've had that opportunity. And I'm really interested to know, obviously dancing was where you started. So is dancing your main passion, or did it shift after you learned the other two?
I would say it's still, I love dancing, and I feel like it's a part of who I am. But as I've gotten older, and as I've done a lot of dancing gigs, I'm definitely more focused on singing now at this stage of my career.
Yeah. And so where I'm kind of going with this is, I know from personal experience that since as long as I can remember, like I would say probably Sophia's age too, I loved to sing. I can just remember singing around the house. It was always shows as well for me. It was like, I loved Phantom of the Opera. I loved Cats. Yeah. My dad used to say I could never cross a room without doing some kind of dance step. Like it was always like a little twirl or something. Yeah. And so for a long time, I literally sang and danced, I suppose, because I loved to do it. And then as I got older, I started to become more aware of, I guess, my shortcomings, like where I wasn't doing so well. And so then I would feel like I would start to second guess. And I feel like I lost a little bit of that passion along the way. I definitely think that's a thing as you get older anyway. You know, when you're a kid, like 8, 9 years old, most kids are just like, if you say go and climb that tree, they're like, cool, I'll go and climb the tree. If you say it to a 14 or a 15 year old, they look around and go, but what are my friends are doing? And like, what, you know, what's that person going to say about it? And what happens if I fall? And if you ask a 40 year old to do it, they're like, no, I'll break my arm, it's not safe, you know. So yeah. The older we get, I think the more we start to question our abilities. Now I know that in the dancing world and in the singing world, it can be super competitive. So I'd be really interested to hear how you navigated that. Was there ever a time where the fear of doing it started to overtake the love of doing it? Or has the passion always overridden everything else?
Well, yes and. So the passion always, I mean, there's been times in my career where I'm sort of like, do I really want to keep doing this? Or like a bad day where I'll have, you know, sort of dark thoughts. And those are the times where I'm like, I don't know. And then it always comes around to the passion. Like I actually don't know anything else that I would want to do or have anything. It's like, in spite of myself, I still keep going sometimes, you know. I love it. Love it. And on the good days, I know that I love it. On the bad days, I'm not sure, but then I can't pull myself away from it, you know? So I do love it. But the other thing I was thinking when you were talking about getting older and having your passion sort of, you know, change, to me, it's also just getting better at something. So like if you start playing the piano in the beginning, you're like, oh, this is so much fun. And I don't really know what I'm doing, but I'm just jamming. And then as you get better, you're like, oh, wait, I'm not so good at this. There's so much I need to learn. And then you get, so it's sort of like a cycle of growth is, you know, realizing that you're not so good at something and deciding whether you want to continue with it. So I feel like I have those moments all the time still, because it's like just part of the cycle. I'm moving to the next, you know, level, for lack of a better word, you know?
Yeah, I so agree with that. And I definitely found that with singing. Actually, I found it with dancing. And at that point, that's when I quit. So I was like, oh wait, I'm not even very good at this. Okay, I'm out. Right. And so I didn't do it anymore. But with singing was always a release for me. You know, I didn't learn to sing. I didn't even learn to sing. I just sang. And it was always a release for me. You know, I would come home from school and I would choose to go and sing. It wasn't like there was no agenda in my head. And this is what I like to get across to people, because, you know, when we start getting tied up in anxiety and fear and frustration and overwhelm and all of those heavy emotions, it's so powerful to know what you love to do, because the passion is what sets you back on track. And I love that you said, you know, you don't really know where you would be without it, because I remember having the moment where I realized that I'm going to do what I do forever. It's like, oh, I'm never going to not do this in some way, shape or form. How it looks might change. And actually, I was having a conversation with somebody yesterday about this, and they were a dancer too. And they were feeling very, very stuck where they were at. And, you know, and they've got stuck because they were going, oh, well, I want to do this, but I don't look right and I'm not in the right shape, so I can't do that yet. And so that was what was keeping them stuck. And we were sort of talking about how, you know, it might change on the landscape. And certainly for dancers, you know, they talk about having a shelf life, you know, for dancers predominantly. And I find it really, really important to let people know that just because there might be a shelf life in that box doesn't mean that at some point you're going to have to stop doing what you love, or that you're not going to be able to tap into that passion anymore. And I think if more people knew, I think first of all, if more people knew what they loved, and second of all, if they knew that it was okay to do those things, they would have that ability to, sorry, my son has just presented me with a can of Coke to open for him, because apparently me doing my job means absolutely nothing to people in this house. There we go. Right, there we go. Shut my door. It's a good boy. I actually thought he'd bought me a drink for a minute. That would have been wonderful, but no, it was just for him. But yeah, this is what I'm so passionate about. And this was kind of why I wanted to go on this angle with this podcast, because so many people listening are in that camp of dealing with a mental health issue. They've got anxiety, they've got depression, or they're under a lot of stress. For some people, it's been a big life change has happened and they're trying to navigate that. And I think when you're in that place, if you don't already have something rooted in your, you know, daily life, like I've always sung, so it's just always been there. But if you don't have that, it can feel very dark, and it can feel very much like you don't have anywhere to go with it, and that you're lost, you know. And if something terrible has happened, or if something big has changed in your life, it can be very easy to start believing that, oh, well, this is it forever. It's never going to be any different. And I am really passionate about getting people back into their joy. And it's not about pushing down feelings or trying to be happy when you're not happy. It's actually the opposite. It's about honoring how you're feeling. And I don't know if you'll agree, but, you know, singing isn't always joy. Sometimes singing is brilliant release for like emotion. And I know, you know, dancers would probably say the same. So would you say that's the case for you?
For sure. I actually sometimes joke that my voice lessons are therapy.
Yeah. I hear that all the time.
So many times where I'll be singing something and it'll bring me to tears, and it's just a release that I need that day. And it's definitely.
Yeah. I so agree with that. And when I was a singing teacher, people used to say to me, oh, it's a bit like therapy, because they would come in and they would sing songs, but inevitably it brings up emotions. And then you go, oh, so what's that all about? And they're like, oh, it's been the awful day, or like I've had a terrible time, whatever. And that it's like they have to get on the couch and start talking it through.
But well, certain what's the qualities of voice, like if you're singing your head voice, for example, versus a chest voice belty situation, that immediately, like, your body associates that with a certain you know, like if you're crying, your voice goes a certain way. So if you're singing in that sort of same space, I find it really easy to start the emotions going, because your body's in a very similar place, you know.
That's so true. And I'd not thought of it like that. I know last year I started to go back to voice lessons again, because part of my story is I lost my voice completely around the same time that I was diagnosed with anxiety. And I've never really known if I lost my voice because of the anxiety, or if I got the anxiety because I lost my voice, because my whole identity was in my voice. You know, I wasn't very good at school. like I wasn't very good at maths or like at all. And I wasn't really a cool kid. You know, I didn't really shine in any way, but singing was something I could always do. And it was something that always made me feel good. And it wasn't even that anyone else told me I could do it. I just felt like I could do it and it felt good when I did it. Mm-hmm. So to have my voice taken away was just devastating. And, you know, in that moment, I had all of that fear that I was just talking about of, oh my God, what happens if this never comes back? Like, who the hell am I going to, like, what is the point of me if I can't sing? Like, it was the one thing that I could offer the world. And yeah, what's the point if I don't have that? And so I did go through some rehabilitation and I did get it back, but it never came fully back. It was forever changed. And I think I would still say that now, although now I don't have that inner turmoil going on when I sing. But for a long time after I got my voice back, there was actually inner turmoil because I would sing, plenty of people would go, oh, that sounds really good. And inside I was like, it's not my voice though. That's not my voice. It's like, you know, and I'd get frustrated if I couldn't hit notes and all of that. And then last year I went back to voice lessons and I know exactly what you mean about the therapy. And I think I used to, like, I think my vocal coach thought I was a bit weird, but luckily he knows me really well. Yeah. But I coached under Chris Johnson, who's actually becoming a really world-renowned voice instructor now, but I just know him as Chris because he used to live in Salisbury. He was best man at my wedding. Like, you know, yeah, we've been buddies for years. And like now he's this vocal guru in the world, which is brilliant. But he used to say things to me and he was always addressing my voice. But yeah, because of the way my brain works now, I'd be like, I'd be reading into all these other like levels to it. And I'd be like, oh my God, so you're saying that it's not just with the voice, but if I just let go of the tension in this area of my life, like then that's going to release this. Yeah. And he'd be like, sure, yeah, okay. I would come out going, oh my God, like it was like an absolute factory reset. I would feel so elated after every session with him. And besides which, my voice was phenomenal. I mean, the man's a wizard with the voice, seriously. Yeah. But it always seemed to give me the lessons that I needed as well. Like, and he would have had no idea that I was dealing with what I was dealing with at the time. He was just there to help me with my voice. Yeah. But it was really interesting to me after I got over the first initial, like, oh my God, my voice is gone. It was interesting to me the concepts I started being told, like, oh, it might be your throat chakra. You know, there might be something you're not saying that you wish you could be saying, or there might be something you're supposed to be doing that you're not doing. I actually came right away from singing at first because I just was like, oh, well, I've wrecked my voice. I'm not going to wreck anyone else's. So I probably shouldn't sing anymore. And that was it. I just like stopped. Apart from doing, you know, I was just teaching in schools a couple of times a week and things like that. But I stopped all my one-to-ones, didn't really gig. And then people close to me were like, why on earth are you not singing? Like, that's your thing that you do. Like, and I really did convince myself for a minute that I'm just not supposed to sing. I guess I was wrong about that, you know, but like you said earlier, I just couldn't stay away from it. And I feel like I went on holiday from singing town and I came back with all these great souvenirs because I came back to it going, oh, well, now I'm a singer, but I'm also someone that can build someone's confidence and I'm connected spiritually and I have all these other things that I never knew before. Yeah. But it's very cool to hear you say the same thing.
Yeah. And I was going to say also that I'm not trying to compare unemployment to losing your voice, but anytime I'm between shows, every single time, no matter how many shows I do, no matter how long I've been in this business, every time I have those thoughts of like, what if it was just luck? Or what if I never get another job? What if that was my last show ever? And like, who am I if I'm not a performer? Like every time. And so now I know that it's coming.
Yeah.
So I sort of mentally prepare myself and I use those times to just do stuff for the fun of it. Like that, like you're saying, just for the passion of it. I just go take classes or I just, you know, work on a song just because I love it without an end goal or without a, you know, target that I'm trying to hit. And it's, but every time it happens, that anxiety of who am I without it, you know?
That's such a good point. And that's the thing about anxiety, isn't it? It doesn't really have logic. So I have the same thing. This isn't the same at all, but it is the same in some ways. I have the same thing. If I go to a theme park and I try to get on a roller coaster, I have absolute fear of getting in a queue. Like, I can't even queue up for a ride. And then if I do queue up for the ride, I get more and more hysterical the closer I get to the ride. So the point where everyone with me is like, what are you, like, why? Just don't get on the ride then. You know, no one's making you do it. But the times that I manage to get on the ride, I always have a great time. And it's like, oh, it's so fun. And then I could literally get off the ride, go back to the queue, and the fear would be back. So it's, there's no logic, because you've just ridden it. You know it's safe. You know it's fun. You know you liked it. Mm-hmm. So why are you scared all over again? And it's that same thing, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
It's that habit, that cycle. Mm-hmm. I would say as well that it's something I've learned is, like, a bit like I shared earlier, it's recognizing that even if a door has closed, like, mm-hmm. even if somebody came along and said, right, no, that's it, you're definitely done, there's no more shows. I believe that when you have a passion, and we all do, when you have a passion, there is always going to be an outlet for it. It yeah. just might not look the way that you think it's going to look. It might not be what you expected it to be. And I think this is a huge lesson that we can all learn, is to let go of that expectation of that, oh, I want this result and it has to be this way. Because actually, you know, when I lost my voice and it was like, right, you can't sing anymore, it was like, well, that's shit. You know, that's really not what I want. And in that moment, I would have given anything to have my voice back and to keep as I was. But actually, because I was forced to go a different way because there was no choice, where I'm at now, I wouldn't trade that for the world. I definitely wouldn't want to go back to where I was. I much prefer who I am now, even with my slightly more gravelly voice than I have before. I've always had a gravelly voice, but it's a little more gravelly now. But like I said, like, it's like I came back from that trip with all these lessons and all these gifts and all of this awareness. And so, yeah, the message I really want to get across for people on this episode is, if you know what you love, then find a way to do it. And this is where people will get stuck. They'll go, oh, all right, but I, you know, I want to be a Broadway performer and I just can't go and do that. Well, no, that, you know, it's not something you can just go and do, and especially now because it's all shut down anyway. But you can find those dollops of joy. I keep saying, it was we had Penny Calvert on the podcast a while back and she coined the phrase dollops of joy, which I love. Yeah. You can find the dollops of joy in any situation. You know, if you've been given that gift and if that is your passion and if that's what brings you that joy, you can access that in a multitude of ways. It's never going to be one way only, you know?
Well, also, it's like taking control of your own joy. Like, if your joy is wrapped up in an outcome that someone else is in control of, then you're giving away your joy. And it's, you're yes. never, you can never, like, if your goal is to be on Broadway, that's not something you will ever be able to control because you're not a Broadway producer unless you right. want to come on and then make yourself. But instead, if you focus on, well, I really love singing, and you just sing, then you're in control of your joy versus I can only be happy if this happens. It's sort of that like grasping thing.
Yeah.
Never feels good.
That's so true. And that's prompting me now to ask about auditions, because obviously, presumably, yes. as a Broadway performer, I bet you've had to go through your Many. Share of auditions. Yeah. And I bet you've probably had more no's than you've had yeses, that's because right. it's just the nature of the beast, isn't it? So how did you learn to manage that? Because here's the thing about creative people. When we sing, we're giving our heart away on a platter to anyone that's listening to it. So yeah. to put yourself into an audition situation where you're likely going to be told that wasn't good enough, that wasn't what we wanted, like, it's not the thing. How quickly did you find a way to deal with that? And how did you deal with that?
It did take some time, I think, I think auditioning in itself is its own skill, and to be able to let it go when you leave the room is a skill that I've worked on a lot. And also, for me, it's if I go in the room and I do my best and I feel like I've prepared well and I feel proud of what I put on the platter for them, then I can leave feeling good. And no matter if they decide to work with me or not, I still can feel proud of what I did in the room. But like you said, most times it's going to be a no. And so the other thing I've learned is to, you know, I think a lot of people when they start out or younger people will want feedback. And there's, you know, if you want feedback because you actually want to sort of use it to change, that's one thing. But a lot of people want feedback as closure or as like a way to hang on for a little bit longer. And that is never healthy because you're going to get, you know, oh, well, we just didn't like your voice. And that's not anything that you can use. So another thing that I've learned is like, walk out of the room and know that I did what I did, feel good about it, and sort of forget about it. And the, like, if I get the job or not is the icing on the cake. Like, really, my job is a professional auditioner because that's what I spend most of my time doing. And then the jobs is just the icing. So
that's such a good way of looking at it, I think.
I try to audition as much as possible because the more you do it, the more comfortable you are in the room and the more comfortable you are just letting it go. And, you know, and that's about focusing on what you can control and not on the things that other people, like, don't make other people your gatekeepers. You get to decide how you move through the world and what you let have your joy or not, you know?
Yeah, I absolutely love that. And I completely agree. I did an X Factor audition once, which isn't quite the same, but it's still brutal, right?
Yeah.
And the stupid thing was, I never wanted to be on the X Factor. I didn't want to do it, but my husband wanted to do it. My husband's a singer as well. And he wanted to do it. So he was like, will you come with me? And I was like, yeah, of course I'll come with you. So we went to this big thing. It was in a big stadium like they do. And back then, I don't know if they still do it like this, but back then we were just in this huge arena. And in the middle of the arena were just these kind of pop-up, a bit like those pull-up banners that you get, just all over the place, with a little stool behind them with a producer or a runner or whatever sat on it. And they had a red pen in one hand and a green pen in the other. We all had numbers on, and you literally walked behind the screen, sang your bit, and they would swipe you red or green, done, you're off. And there was literally like 20 people all singing at once. Like, it wasn't a separate room.
Right.
So I remember, like, you know, when I actually got, because the thing was, we stood in the pissing rain for ages. So by the time we got in, I was livid. I was just like, I didn't even want to come, and now we're wet. And then that was when Kev went, well, he said, you may as well pick up a number and audition. You've come all this way. You're here for the day anyway. Why don't you just give it a try? You just never know. So I was like, oh, whatever. Yeah, well, it's something to do, isn't it? So picked up a number. So of course, he goes behind his screen. I go behind mine. He comes out with a red line. I come out with a green one. I was like, well, now this is awkward. Because now you haven't got through and now I have. And then he got really excited. Yeah. He was like, oh my God, you're going to get on the show. I know it. You're going to win. Like, he literally went from 0 to 100 in a split second. And I was like, oh crap. And all of my friends were the same. My best friend was picking out her outfits for the live shows and everything. And I was like, oh my God. And then I had to come back, I don't know, like 2 weeks later or whatever. My levels of anxiety in the lead up to that were next level. I just didn't want to go. And I remember, like, we had to get up at something stupid, like 4 a.m. to catch a train to go and do this thing that I didn't even want to do and to be judged. And, you know, I've learned since that I actually hate any form of anything like auditions, exams. I'm just not here for it anymore. Yeah. Yeah. But back then I was like, oh, I better do it because I said I'd do it. And so by the time we got to the place, I was just sick with nerves. And Kevin said, when they called my name, because they used to call you in little groups.
Mm-hmm.
And when he called my name, I had to line up with these 10 other people. And Kev said, it looked like they'd lined you up to shoot you. Like, that was what your face looked like. It was just gray. I was just like, I'm going to throw up. And and I went in this room, and I remember outside the seats were like, there were 5 along one wall and 5 along another, and then the door. And literally that first person went in, they sang a couple of things, and then they came out crying. Yeah. And then you'd all move up and
see. Probably singing.
Yeah, and they're all awesome. They're all much better than you in your head. You're just like, oh my God, these people are better than me, and they're all being sent home. I was like, oh, what am I doing? Anyway, I went in there and I started singing, and I felt like I was doing quite well. But this was in a football stadium. And so I've got this thing I do when I sing. I look off to the right. I now think that I channel when I sing. I think that's what it is.
Yeah.
But back then I didn't know what it was. I just thought I was a bit weird. So I was looking out the window, and then this little voice in my head starts talking to me while I'm singing, going, you should really give them eye contact. Like, don't look out the window. Like, you should give them eye contact.
Yeah.
And I'm singing going, I don't want to give them eye contact. And they're like, no, you should definitely give them eye contact. So then I kind of got enough balls to kind of give them eye contact. Mm-hmm. And I ended up fixing on the woman sat in the middle.
Yeah.
And then I couldn't look away. And then the voice in my head goes, like, yeah, she was, you could see she was getting really uncomfortable. And like, I think I was singing an Aretha Franklin song as well. I think it was the one that, what's the one? You're no good, heartbreaker. It's proper like sassy as well.
Yeah.
And I'm like staring at this woman and she's getting uncomfortable. And then the voice in my head is going, you need to look away now. Look away. Yeah. Like, you look like a freak. Look away. And then it was like, no, it's too late. Like, she's freaked out. Like, you've totally blown it. Anyway, I got to the end of the audition and they were like, oh, thank you. But, you know, you've come to the end of your journey. By that point, I said thank you because I was so relieved to have not had to go any further. Because if I'd got through that one in the afternoon, it was the judge panel, like the celebrity judges, which I was just really scared about. Yeah. And I opened my mouth to say thank you and no sound came out. And then I got pins and needles in my hands and it went all the way up to my elbow. So then I tried to leave and I couldn't open the door. I was like, oh, I'm trying to get out of the door. Like, I mean, to say it was a bad audition was like, you know, that's an understatement. Yeah. And so anyway, and then aside from the fact that everyone had pinned all of these hopes on me, like I was going to be the one that, you know, not only got through, they thought I was going to win it. So to have to come out and be like, no, I didn't do it. So then for years, I didn't do anything like that. I didn't do anything like it. And then when I was pregnant, I can't remember which one of my sons it was. I got a call from a friend who's, she was working for The Voice at the time as like a scouting agent. And she messaged me and was like, you'd be amazing on The Voice. You need to go on. And I was like, no, like, no, no, thank you. And she was like, no, you'd be really good. You should do it. And in the end, I was like, well, I think I'm going to go and do it just because I'm different now. I'm having a baby. So I know I'm not going to do the show anyway. I think I was about 8 months pregnant. I was proper pregnant. And I was like, I think I'm just going to go to prove to myself that I can do an audition and not be an absolute twat. So I did exactly that. And everything you said about letting go of that expectation of trying to please the panel, like I let go of all of that. Like, what song are they going to want? What do they want me to wear? Like, how do they want me to be? And instead, I mean, I didn't know at the time, but apparently I become something called Pregnant Lily when I'm pregnant, which means all my filters disappear and I don't give a shit anyway. So it kind of served me quite well. But like the first thing I did was waddle in and demand a chair. I was like, these shoes are coming off and I'm going to need a seat because I'm pregnant. Yeah. But I came out of that audition feeling so proud of myself because exactly like you said, I felt like I was funny. I felt like I sang a song I wanted to sing. I did it my way. I answered their questions. I loved who I met because there was in that audition, it was a producer and a vocal coach. And I recognized the vocal coach from TV. So I was like, so I just was excited to, you know, kind of chew the fat with her. And I genuinely came out and was able to let go of all outcomes. I was like, if I get through, cool, but it really doesn't matter. And I felt like I laid to bed that horrendous experience that I'd had that had actually, it damaged me on so many levels that I didn't even realize at the time.
Yeah.
You know, on the surface, it was just like, oh, you didn't get through to the X Factor. So what? You know, so many people are like that. But I was actually very vulnerable in terms of self-esteem, self-belief. I think because singing is always supposed to be my medicine, singing is supposed to be what heals me, I'm not supposed to be a performing monkey and trying to please anybody else. And I'd gone in with that energy, you know, of trying to please them and almost like put aside anything that was for me.
Yeah, it never works that way.
No.
You know?
No.
Sure. And I definitely have been guilty of that, especially in the beginning of my career, where I thought, I want this job so badly, I'm just going to try and think, what do they want, and try to fit myself into that mold.
Yeah.
And that never works, because they, you know, you either are right for it or you're not, and you're never going to be able to like squish yourself. And even if you do, it feels crappy. So
you'd never sustain it, would you? You'd be unhappy, right? Because then you'd have to be that person, that version of that you'd created. And I feel like this is so relevant, whether anyone listening is a Broadway singer or, you know, hoping to be or not. I just think that's such a life lesson, because how many times do we try and create a persona to please a boss or to please a potential partner, or fit in with exactly that.
Yeah.
And it's not sustainable, and it's definitely not the route to fulfillment and joy, because the point is, we're created in perfection, right? It's never supposed to be perfect, but who you are is perfect. And, you know, for sure, we're supposed to learn and grow and expand as we go. But who we are in our core is exactly who we're supposed to be. And so anything that comes from trying to hide that is, first of all, never going to be sustainable, but most of all, is never going to bring you the joy you think it's going to bring you. So that job you think you want, that role you think you want, that partner you think you want, they wouldn't bring you true joy if, to get it, you had to completely change who you are, you know?
And also, if you think about like who inspires you, or who are the people who you most admire or look up to, usually I find for myself, it's people who are so authentically themselves. Like, that is what I find attractive about them or amazing about them. It's like, wow, that I am really seeing who that person really is. And that's what like draws us to certain people. And, you know, it's just never, if you're forcing yourself into something, like you said, it's not sustainable. It doesn't feel good. And people are not, you know, we all like, I feel like we see more than we, more than we realize when we look. We're seeing so many more things than just what our eyes are seeing. And we're all drawn to people who are authentically themselves and doing what they love. And we can feel that.
Yeah, I totally agree. I actually have a belief that we form almost like spiritual cords to the people and to the experiences that we are meant to have in our life. Mm-hmm. And so that works for romantic partners, that works for clients in a business, that works even for getting an audition, right? Or a show or whatever. If you can have the belief that you are tethered at the soul to that person, to that experience, first of all, it means that anything not that is just going to bypass you. So that's okay. Mm-hmm. So when you get a no, or when you get that rejection, it isn't actually rejection. They're doing you a favor. It's like, no, you're looking for this thing and I'm not that thing. So let it go.
Right.
So many of us grab onto the wrong thing, and then the right thing can't come because we're hanging on to the wrong thing. And I also think, in terms of creating those connections, like you just said, it's about shining your light. The people that are for you won't find you if you're too busy wearing a disguise, giving off a completely different vibe, you know?
Right. Yeah.
Such a powerful thing that's come from that conversation. I love it. And it's just been brilliant to speak to you. I can't let you go without digging into, what are the shows? What shows have you done, and what was your favorite?
Okay. So in order, the shows I've done are Wicked was my debut.
Wicked. Wow.
In the Heights, Ghost, Soul Doctor, Motown, Shuffle Along, the Donna Summer musical, and Hadestown I did on Broadway. And then on the road, I did Hamilton. And I was a Rockette for many, many years.
Wow, wow, wow. So exciting. So amazing. And so what was your favorite? Did you have a favorite?
That's always such a hard question, because I feel like my children, like I love them each for different reasons.
Yeah.
Yeah,
they're very diverse, those shows you've listed as well.
I would say I'm going to say today my favorite is In the Heights.
Amazing. And so what's your, I know we're in weird times right now and nobody really knows what's going to happen, but let's just be positive and say that at some point the lights will come back on and the shows will be back. What is your goal? Like, have you got a goal that you're setting your sights on? What is something that you're aiming for? What would you be going after?
Well, I would love to have a role that is written for me, so that feels like it fits me to a T. But again, that's not something that I can immediately control. So my goals for myself are more to do with like my practice and making sure that I'm, you know, ready when the opportunity comes and ready when the lights come back on. I would love to just work with creative people who I'm, you know, in the same energy with, and, you know, new stories. I would love to work with females. There's not a lot of female directors on Broadway right now. Hadestown, my most recent show, does have a female director, but I would love to work with all women because it's been mostly men, which is not a bad thing, but I'm just interested in telling some stories from a female perspective. For once.
Oh, I love it. Yeah, it's so true. And I love that you've made that distinction as well between, you know, the goal that's the goal, you know, love to have a part written for you, but also recognizing that it may or may not be within my control. It will come if it's meant for me, it will come. You know, it's that saying, what's meant for you can't pass you by.
Right.
So it's holding that intention. So you'll have to come back and let me know if that happens.
Okay.
And then we'll have to come and check it out.
Yeah.
When we're allowed on planes again and when we're allowed to go and see shows again.
Yeah.
Oh, that would be incredible. So thank you so much for spending this time with us today. I think that conversation that came out of that was so needed. You know, I think so many people will have needed to hear that. So to everybody listening, what did you think of this one? How cool is this? We're going to go in this kind of direction. I've got some amazing guests lined up, just like Afra, who are kind of in this vein. So stay tuned for that. But in the meantime, use the links in the show notes to get in touch. Let me know what you thought. If you have any questions, any feedback, anything like that, you can email me, you can DM me, and you can also leave me a voice note, which always makes my day. So do take the time to do that. So Afra, thank you very much for giving us your time.
Lily, so fun.
And to everyone listening, remember, confidence is yours as soon as you choose it. I'll be back again very soon. Lots of love.
You've been listening to Lily Badcock on the Confidence Academy podcast. Thank you so much for being here. Please show me some love by subscribing to the show and giving it a rate and review on iTunes. And make sure you never miss another episode by joining my mailing list. I'll write to you every week to let you know what's been happening over here in Lilyland, and you'll be the first to know about opportunities to work with me or to join me at one of my live events. Oh yes, people, the Rest and Reset Retreat will be making a comeback. Whoop whoop! You can get the mailing list link by clicking the show notes below or visit lilybadcock.com for all of the information. And while you're there, why not check out all of the links from today's episode? And don't forget as well, you can come and join me over in the Confidence Academy Facebook group, where you can post your questions and comments for me and my incredible guests. And of course, if you know anyone who needs this show in their life, please feel free to share this episode with them. Thank you again for being here. See you again soon. Big love.